Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, I call it an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There has been a signal development, a very important victory in the war for the free world, in my estimation. The re-election, it would appear, of Benjamin Netanyahu as the Prime Minister of Israel. Who better to talk about the significance of this election and what comes from it than Carolyn Glick, one of the people of Israel's great champions, most articulate authors and columnists at the Jerusalem Post. Most recently, she's written The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. It sounds increasingly like the plan that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will follow. Carolyn Glick, first of all, congratulations to you and your countrymen, and thank you for joining us to talk a bit about it.
Thanks so much, Frank.
So your reaction, do we have a new prime minister as a result of this, and is it going to be Benjamin Netanyahu?
Benjamin Netanyahu was reelected overwhelmingly yesterday by the Israeli electorate. The Likud scored a landslide victory, and the right, the nationalist camp, the right wing in Israel as well, trounced the left, and Netanyahu formed, by all accounts, including his own, very stable, large governing coalition in the next few weeks with the nationalist camp and the ultra-Orthodox party. So I think we're looking at a four-year term of office with a stable government in Israel led by Netanyahu.
So the reports that we're hearing that he may, even with all of the right, fall short and find himself having to make common cause with the left, which was, as you say, clearly repudiated by the electorate in Israel, are not to be believed.
No, they're not to be believed. They're completely false. Both the Labor Party and Likud have stated outright that they're not interested in a unity deal. Labor Chief Buji Herzog said that he's going to go and lead the opposition against the government. And the Likud said, great. So no, there's not going to be a unity government.
Okay. And stability is to be prized in Israel. It doesn't happen all the time. Does Bibi have, in all of this as a result of your assessment of the election returns, a mandate? And if so, what is it, do you think, Carolyn Glick?
Well, he ran on a national security platform, and he has a mandate to continue with his defense of Israel against Iran and its nuclear project, and to confront the Obama administration on the positions that they're taking regarding Iran and regarding Israel and the Palestinians that, as we see, the Israeli people reject and consider to be dangerous for the security of Israel. And so he received a very strong mandate from the people. If there was any question about whether he was a lone voice and representing only himself and a smattering of supporters on the far right, so now we see that no. When he went to Congress earlier this month and when he talks about the national security issues that are challenging Israel and are threatening Israel, including the Obama administration's policy towards Israel and the Palestinians and towards Iran, that he speaks with the voice of the Israeli people.
And he notably said in the closing hours of the election that he was not going to have any part on his watch of a Palestinian state, making clear why, namely that it would pose a mortal threat to Israel. To what extent do you think that factored into this decisive victory, and specifically, is that part of his mandate now to ensure that that does not come about?
It's certainly in his mandate. He did it because he wanted to make sure that the natural voters of the more ideological parties, the Jewish Home Party, would feel comfortable voting for Likud, because that is the issue of the Jewish Home Party, opposition to Palestinian statehood and strong national defense. So He needed to get the votes away from the Jewish Home Party to the Likud in order to ensure that he would have by far the largest party and be able to surmount challenges from smaller parties that would have forced on him a unity government. So I think that that was the reason he did that, but certainly there is no appetite in Israel for further concessions to the Palestinians, and the fact that he said that during that campaign also gives him a mandate from the voters to oppose American pressure on the Palestinians, so that in itself is also important.
I want to talk about that in a moment, but I did just want to say I thought it rather striking that, as at least as I understood the reports, Naftali Bennett, the leader of this Israel Home Party, was actually encouraging his voters to vote for Likud to ensure this kind of outcome. Is that correct? And if so, how important was that in the outcome?
No, it wasn't correct. Naftali Bennett, the head of the Jewish Home Party, did not encourage his voters to vote for Likud. That would have been insane. But what he said was that he would form a joint list or whatever you would call it with the Likud, so that if the Likud got less votes than the Labor Party did, that the president would say, okay, well, this joint faction is larger than every other faction, and therefore I could ask Netanyahu to form a coalition, even if he gets fewer votes than Labor does. But that is not true.
Carolyn, let me turn to the President of the United States and the policies that he pursued in all of this, including, as we understand it, putting on American taxpayers' dime operatives from his own campaigns in for the purposes of running ops against Bibi Netanyahu. This is only one of several examples of the hostility of this president towards, I think, not just towards Benjamin Netanyahu, but towards Israel as well. Talk about what you described in a recent column as Israel's next 22 months, as evidenced in this election campaign.
Okay, I mean, the interference on behalf of the left was the least of the things that Obama has been doing in recent weeks to harm Israel. I mean, you know, the thing that we have to understand is that it's not that Israel would have had an easier ride if we had gone with the left-wing parties to form a coalition, which is what they claim, that they would be able to diminish the hostility of the West, led by the Obama administration, to Israel, simply by virtue of being more liberal, more open to concessions. Because what we see with Obama, and particularly in the actions that he's taken in the past couple of weeks, is that he really has ill will towards Israel. He wants to marginalize Israel. He wants to realign American foreign policy in the Middle East away from Israel, and that required the pressure on Israel will be unrelenting, and it has nothing to do with who's in charge of Israel, but rather with Obama's foreign policy goals in his last 22 months in office.
And this is evidenced, among other things, as you pointed out, by the appointment of Robert Malley as the new Middle East coordinator for the National Security Council. Talk a bit about his background and why this is of such concern.
So Malley is one of the most extreme anti-Israel figures in the Democratic Party's foreign policy. He's made a name for himself by blaming the Palestinian terrorist war that began in 2000 on Israel, and said that Israel's radical offer of statehood to the Palestinians that was proffered during the 2000 Camp David peace summit that President Clinton organized in the waning months of his presidency, that offer, which included almost all of the territories, virtually all of them, and the partition of Jerusalem and the surrender of the Temple Mount, Judaism's most sacred site, to Palestinian sovereignty, that wasn't enough, and that it was not a serious offer, and that anyway, the Palestinians' continued commitment to the destruction of Israel is legitimate, it's understandable, and that they can't be judged poorly because they wouldn't make peace with Israel. So he really believes that they have a legitimate case when they say that what they want to do is destroy the state of Israel. That's their goal. And he supports it because he doesn't oppose Palestinian terrorism. He views it as legitimate. And now this man who supports the Palestinians despite their position that Israel has to be destroyed and despite their use of terrorism as a strategic tool to achieve their objective of destroying Israel, that man is now in charge of directing U.S. Middle East policy for the next 22 months. And so this is an act of aggression, of overt hostility towards Israel, and it's also a signal of where Obama is going to be taking U.S. Middle East policy, and particularly policy towards Israel, in the next 22 months. And it's deeply troubling.
Obviously, part and parcel of the larger program of trying to, as you say, reorient not only American policy towards the region, but actually the facts on the ground with the elevation of Iran, of all places, to a higher status. And Carolyn, we have to leave it at this, but I hope we'll have a chance to talk with you again soon about, among other things, the administration's evident decision to treat Iran and even Hezbollah as no longer terrorist threats. The mind reels. Congratulations to you and your countrymen on an extraordinarily important outcome in the re-election of Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday. Thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us about it, and go enjoy the savor of this great event. Next up, we will be speaking with Diana West. We'll take stock with her on this and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. One of our favorites here at Secure Freedom Radio is our regular Diana West, a blogger par excellence, a longtime syndicated columnist, best-selling author. You can find her works at dianawest.net. Please be sure to check out her newest book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Diana, welcome back. It is always good to have you with us.
Wonderful to be back, Frank.
One of the things that we've been talking about, both with Carolyn Glick and we'll be, I'm sure, talking about with some of our other guests, is something that has just come across the wire with even for those of us who've become jaded about this administration, a stunning effect. And that is the report that the so-called worldwide threat assessment produced by the Director of National Intelligence has removed from the depiction of the terror threats we're facing the nation of Iran and its proxy Hezbollah, both of whom have long graced the national designated terrorist operations list of the United States government. What on earth is going on here, Diana?
Well, this is madness and irresponsible to the nth degree. I think even as you say, it's hard even to put words to it. It is exactly the wrong. This action is simply a matter of wishing to make it so. This is wishful thinking. This is fantasy. And this is also, I mean, you have to wonder what is behind it. If I were in Congress, if I were advising Congress, I would certainly demand, ask, rattle every cage possible to get hearings into how this decision was made in contravention of all known facts about Iran and its goals and its actions.
Yeah. And really setting the stage, presumably, for more concessions to the Iranians in the interest of getting this nuclear deal. It seems on the face of it sort of comparable to a mistake we made a while back where we, again, at the behest of intelligence officials touting the Iranians had actually gotten out of the nuclear business. So Diana West is our guest. She is a syndicated columnist of many years, now a blogger par excellence. Check it out at dianawest.net. You can also read her two splendid books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. And speaking of American Betrayal, one of the things that you drilled down on in this very important book, Diana, was how we dealt with the Soviets at a time when there was an awful lot of sort of whitewashing or airbrushing, if you will, of their actual behavior. Does this seem familiar based on what we're now watching with respect to Iran?
Very much so, yes. And in a nutshell, in order to, quote, normalize relations with the extremely abnormal Soviet dictatorship at that point in 1933, it had just murdered millions and millions of its own citizens. So this was another whitewash moment. We normalized relations based on lies and continued to enter into subsequent agreements over the next decades that were more lies. And we know this for a fact on many counts, but very interestingly, when Ronald Reagan came into office, he ordered a review of the past 25 years of arms control agreements with the Soviet Union to find out what had happened with them, what sort of compliance we had achieved or they had complied with. There was virtually none. And so you have to compare this to looking at another revolutionary entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran, very similarly oriented. If the Soviets were based their statecraft on deception, we have the Islamic State of Iran basing it on taqiyya, which is another word for deception. Agreements mean nothing. These are both revolutionary systems. We tried this with the Soviet Union. It was a fiasco upon fiasco. The same pattern is being repeated where you're going for pieces of paper that mean nothing. And it is except in terms of Iranian or Soviet aggrandizement and expansion. That is what they see the process of negotiation with, whereas our people, most of them we can assume, see it as actually trying to make an agreement. There's a disconnect here. And
there
it's disastrous.
There is indeed. And as you say, the history of what this led to with respect to the Soviet Union, it really had not been for Reagan sort of trying to turn things around altogether and creating conditions under which the Soviet institutions and regime were essentially destroyed. I fear that we would have been propping them up to this day and doing so in a way that would be very detrimental, not only to the freedom of people in the former Soviet evil empire, as Reagan called it, but of course to the rest of us. And we're at the risk of doing the same now. In fact, it's interesting that we seem to be. And I wanted to ask you about David Petraeus, a man you've followed closely for a long time. But apparently, despite a recent admission to having engaged in very, very problematic behavior, well, illegal behavior with respect to handling of classified information, is apparently back advising the White House on Iraq. And one of the things that's happening there, of course, is that we seem to be now effectively allied with the Iranians in their efforts to dominate even more that country. Talk about that.
Yes, well, we always were. I mean, this was always the sub-story of Iraq. And to be consulting with David Petraeus at this point after the fiasco of Iraq and Afghanistan, it's of a piece in terms of the whitewash. Military policy was set in two wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, by David Petraeus and other commanders and other strategists, but he was certainly the most prominent of this era. People who did not take Islam into any consideration when devising strategy. If you go through the various strategies, assessments, guidebooks, it is not an issue. Jihad is not an issue that was taken into consideration when devising any of these nation-building programs that have just been just tremendous fiascos for the United States. To consult him is perfectly fine if also in your same alternate universe, Iran is not a terrorist entity, if the Hezbollah is not a terrorist entity, the group responsible for so much carnage, American carnage in Iraq and elsewhere, in Lebanon going back and so on. I mean, it's sort of hard to even comprehend what is going on. It is such a breakdown.
Let me turn quickly to something you've written about at your marvelous website, dianawest.net, and that is something you entitled, What Do We Want? Checks and Balances Now. Talk about what Senator Tom Cotton, freshman senator, and 46 other senators have done in this very crucible, the Iran deal, and trying to establish the constitutional processes that are supposed to involve checks and balances on, well, what amount to treaties like this now in the cooking with the Iranians at the behest of the Obama administration.
Yes, well, it turns out that Senator Cotton is also something of an archaeologist. He dug out this really amazing document called the U.S. Constitution. He did. He dusted it off. He consulted it. He gave a little sort of Cliff Notes version of checks and balances of what the balance of powers really means. And he put it out there on his website for all the world to see, in this case addressing it to the leaders of Iran. But I do believe he could and should actually make such an open letter to the Obama administration and members of the American media, because there seems to be this seems to be more lost history, and he's putting the world on notice that indeed there is still a constitution, and at least he and his 47 colleagues in the Senate who signed this letter do believe the same thing. And it's I don't know where it's going to go, but it certainly has caught the attention of the entire world. I mean, this really was a very meaningful Paul Revere-like moment, and
deserve our thanks and credit, not the approbation that the administration and its apologists and enablers have been touting.
The New York Daily News called them traitors.
Just scandalous. Diana, we have to let you go, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for your time, as always, your insights, especially, you know, your help in penetrating these acts of malfeasance and what they portend for all of us. Keep it up at dianawest.net. Come back to us next week. Next up, we'll speak with Jack Caravelli, a longtime non-proliferation official and expert, about this Iran deal and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Israel's prime minister yesterday scored an unexpected and stunning re-election victory. It's all the more sweet for the direct repudiation it represents of President Obama by the Israeli electorate. After all, Mr. Obama had done everything imaginable to undermine Bibi Netanyahu. That involved not only publicly and repeatedly humiliating and castigating him, it also entailed sending, apparently at U.S. taxpayer expense, his own campaign operatives to help the leftist opposition. In the end, Obama's imperiousness backfired. Faced with dire threats from Iran, the Islamic State, Hezbollah, Hamas, etc., Israelis gave a renewed mandate to a leader opposing further concessions to his country's enemies. They also rejected pressure and threats coming from President Obama, a man who insists on making more and more concessions to Israel's foes and ours. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Jack Caravelli. He is a man with considerable experience in senior positions of the United States government. He served for about 14 years in the Central Intelligence Agency, specializing in what were then Soviet strategic forces. He moved over to the National Security Council staff under President Clinton and served as his director for nonproliferation. He moved on from there to the Department of Energy and worked as a deputy assistant secretary in that department's nonproliferation space. And he is now contributing mightily to our thinking about these national security issues in the private sector. We're delighted to have him back. Jack, welcome.
Thanks very much, Frank.
First and foremost, I'm interested in getting your take, Jack, on what Vladimir Putin is up to. He disappeared for 10 days or so, but he's back. And so are Russia's nuclear forces and it seems other forces as well, notably in the Arctic at the moment. What do you make of what Putin is doing there?
Well, Frank, I mean, let's go back to the basics. We are about 1 year into this Putin adventure, if you will, the wholly illegal and unjustified annexation of Crimea. And then, of course, the heavy engagement in eastern Ukraine. I think the issues you raised are part of a larger Putin strategy to intimidate the West, to push as hard as he can, see what the pushback is, if any. There hasn't been much. And I think what we're really seeing, although few want to label it as such, but I think what we're really seeing is a, you know, possible return to the kind of Cold War engagements that we had, as you know, for decades, but that the West, both the United States and Europe, seem to have forgotten. So I think there's a large set piece in Putin's mind, and I assume he's going to continue to pursue these aggressive policies until someone or something pushes back on him.
You know, Jack, what you've just alluded to in terms of a new Cold War is really a reminder of how vastly different the situation is at the moment. Putin's country is much diminished, to be sure, and his economy is in trouble. But his military capabilities relative to those of NATO at the moment, particularly in the nuclear area, are very different. And the Europeans' dependency on Putin's oil and natural gas supplies is totally different than it was, thanks in part to Reagan's efforts to prevent that Siberian gas pipeline. But to what extent, and you've just come back from Europe, as I understand it, do you see the effects of all of this over two decades or more now, really putting Putin in a position to be aggressive and perhaps successfully so, not just in Crimea and perhaps not just in the Arctic North, but beyond?
Well, Frank, you've posed an incredibly important question. I think the short answer is, yeah, we are seeing the bitter fruits, of, if you will, of the, I guess, the collective wishful thinking, both in Europe and certainly in parts of the United States, including this administration, of a belief or a hope that the new Russia, quote unquote, was turning a corner and from the 90s on would slowly become more integrated into the West, both in terms of its policies and its thinking. Obviously, under at least this Russian president, that's certainly not the case, and it's unlikely to be the case as long as Putin remains in power. What we've seen as sort of a practical effect of the wishful thinking is the issue that I discussed last week in London with former British defense chief Liam Fox. We were discussing NATO spending. As you know, that's become a major controversy. The minimum of the NATO countries, in theory, commit to is 2% of their GDP. Virtually no NATO country provides that, Frank.
Other than the United States, and only we by the skin of our teeth, I'm afraid. Sorry to interrupt you there, Jack. I just wanted to get that point in that, you know, we're still considerably more generous with respect to this investment, but not as much as we should either. But the cumulative effect of all of this has got to be emboldening a guy, and you've studied the Soviets and their doctrine and practices, which Vladimir Putin certainly seems imbued with. It can't come out well if these guys perceive us as being either irresolute or simply incapable of doing much about their aggressive behavior.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, we know that if history teaches us anything, it's that aggression, if left unchecked, will just continue. I think Putin has the attitude, I think, Frank, that, you know, Russia has not only an absolute right to its own security, but an absolute right to its security at the expense of its neighbors. That's unacceptable. But again, we've, over the past 20 years of focusing on other areas and reduced defense spending, you know, we've placed ourselves in a position we're not really prepared to deal with him forcefully. And that's only going to, I think, instigate further problems down the road with Mr. Putin.
I'm afraid you're absolutely right. Jack Caravelli is our guest. He is the author of two very important books, Beyond Sand and Oil, The Nuclear Middle East, and Nuclear Insecurity, Understanding the Threat from Rogue Nations and Terrorists. And Jack, I want to turn to that because a similar kind of problem is clearly emerging as we wind up engaging in the name of nonproliferation, by the way, your portfolio at the National Security Council back in the Clinton administration, in practices that are, it would appear, creating a vast new impetus behind proliferation, not only with respect to Iran itself, the object of the present negotiations, but also with respect to others in the region who, as they witness Iran seemingly getting the green light to go nuclear, intend to do the same themselves. Talk about what you think is happening with the deal at the moment with Iran and its implications.
The likelihood is we will have a deal for no other reason than I think the Obama administration would sell its soul to make a deal with Iran on the nuclear question, of course.
Or more to the point, sell our soul.
Sadly true. The implications of this, as you outlined, Frank, are several. Number one, and this is a prediction, and who knows if I'll be right, but I think we have to consider the fact that Obama will use a nuclear deal with Iran, not only for that purpose, but also to begin a strategic dialogue with Iran, perhaps somewhat not unlike what he's trying to do with Cuba. I think we will see, before he leaves office, an outreach to Iran politically as well on the nuclear side. Now, beyond that, and I think this goes to the heart of your question, I find it almost impossible to believe that, as you said, the other leading states in the region, beginning with the Saudis, the Egyptians, possibly Turkey, are just going to sit back and watch Iran have the wherewithal, by treaty, if you will, to advance its nuclear ambitions and not do anything. You know, I think that's just implausible. So we may well see one of the, again, bitter fruits of this nuclear deal, and it hasn't been much discussed, but one of the bitter fruits may be a shredding of the non-proliferation treaty that has, you know, to some extent anyway, restrained nations from becoming nuclear weapon states. So we are about, you know, on top of the problems with Russia, with ISIS in the Middle East, we are about to enter, you know, possibly a much more dangerous and transformed region than what we've even had the past few years.
Having specialized in this nonproliferation business, you know better than just about anybody that in the process of shredding the nonproliferation regime and practices, we are essentially telling every country that we've negotiated nuclear power arrangements with that they too should be entitled to having the full fuel cycle and put in place essentially all of the elements they need to have the bomb.
Well, that's exactly right. I know you have deep experience in these areas as well, Frank. And, you know, we both know that, you know, the technology that comes with commercial nuclear power also has, you know, considerable value, you know, to those that may seek a nuclear weapons capability. So, we are in a really a dangerous and very tricky environment. And the capacity or willingness of at least this administration to take on those issues really seems to be lacking. And that's obviously deeply troubling to me, and I know to you as well.
It is, and I think should be troubling to every American, and will probably become more so with the passage of time. Jack, we will be looking to you for guidance in assessing it, and notably, what to make of the deal when the administration finishes up, presumably in the next little bit. Come back to us again very soon. Jack Caravelli, former Central Intelligence Agency analyst and White House National Security Council Staff Director for Proliferation. Thanks for your contributions today and what you've done in the past for our country. Keep it up, and we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, we talk with Pete Hegseth. We'll get his take on what we're doing in Iraq, as well as with Iran, and to our vets. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We will never fully understand what we've asked of our military service members, of their families, or their children, asking them to deploy, patrol, stay on watch, on point, asking them to put themselves in harm's way, to endure it all. But we do understand that it's our turn, our duty, to bring them all the way home, to keep them secure, to have their backs for the rest of their lives. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs do whatever it takes to help our most severely ill or injured veterans live independently, at no cost, for life, so that they might stand at ease. Find out how you can help at findwwp.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress.
A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by a man I've come to know and admire greatly, not only for his service in uniform, but for his service after taking it off. Now as the chief executive of a marvelous organization he founded called Concerned Veterans for America. You see him frequently at Fox News, where he is an important contributor. He is also associated with a number of other organizations, including the Center of the American Experiment and the Council on Foreign Relations. But we're delighted to have him with us to talk about what he has been doing at Concerned Veterans for America and what he makes of what the Obama administration is doing, notably to Concerned and other veterans. Pete Hegseth, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Frank, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Let's talk first and foremost about an important project you have been pursuing at Concerned Veterans for America. It has to do with the president's so-called leading from behind approach to foreign policy, the second installment of which I gather has been recently released. Talk a little bit about the project and, more to the point, what your findings were in this new product.
Absolutely. It's Concerned Veterans for America just launched the Strength and Security Project within our organization. Very similar, Frank, to the great work you've been doing at the Center for Security Policy for quite some time, just trying to highlight security challenges to this nation and propose eventually sound solutions to them. And as a part of it, we've been launching a video series of, 5 to 8 minute web videos that lay out case studies of examples where this president's lead from behind policy had led to, unfortunately, terrible consequences. So the first one was on Libya a couple of months ago, and highlighted their lack policy or lack thereof that has led to a power cake that really no one's talking about. But Libya is the next frontier of ISIS and radical Islamists run amok because of the void that we've created. But the more recent one we just launched last week was about Iraq and the rise of ISIS and what policy choices were made by this administration very directly that led to the gathering threat that is the Islamic State today. And it lays out in eight minutes kind of, and we're not trying to litigate should we have gone to Iraq or not. We leave that all aside. What we say is we're there, and we surged and had a great deal of success. And then the President Obama had an option to either responsibly draw down and leave a residual force or not. And, of course, we all know he pulled him out, and then he drew a red line in Syria that he wouldn't enforce. And the combination of those two led to an unholy mix of factors that have led to the rise of the Islamic State. So we're trying to do an education effort, make sure people understand the implications of these policies, and we're going to launch a series of these case study videos that lay out really the failures of this administration's foreign policy and ultimately what needs to be done to reverse it.
Yeah, look, this is an incredibly important service, but it must be exceedingly painful for you, Pete Hegseth, as one of those who served in Iraq, as well as in your previous capacity as the executive director of another terrific veterans organization, Vets for Freedom, having made the case so effectively for the surge, to see all of this squandered, at the lives, to say nothing of the national treasure, for so little. And as we were talking about earlier in the program with Carolyn Glick, to see in particular the president seemingly reorienting American policy to enable Iran to play an even bigger role in that country of Iraq, as well as more generally to be sort of the new hegemon in the Middle East. Talk about this in that broader context, Pete.
Boy, that's right. On a personal level, the day the black flag of ISIS flew over Fallujah and other countries, I had a sense for the first time of how Vietnam veterans felt during the fall of Saigon. It's very personal and very visceral in that sense. At the same time, strategically, to watch the implications of our retreat and the rise of an enemy like ISIS, it's not just about veterans in our service and the legacy, which of course we care about and matters a great deal to us. It's about what it's doing to our country's reputation, what it's doing to our security, and then who else is benefiting from it. And you said it exactly. Iran has filled the void. They've taken advantage of our real lack of policy. In the Middle East, it's all about power. It's all about who's there with the guns to support the good guys or the bad guys. And right now, because we're choosing to stay behind the lines in Baghdad training the Iraqi army, checking, very technical boxes, it's the Iranians and the Quds Force and their commander on the front line with Shia militias taking the fight to ISIS, fueling sectarian fires and giving them more of a reason, you're right, to expand their orbit and expand their power.
Pete Hegseth, again, is our guest. He is the Chief Executive Officer for Concerned Veterans for America. He holds two Bronze Stars for, among other things, his service in Iraq. And Pete, one of the other things I just wanted to get your thoughts on, I want to turn to another issue you've been engaging on very importantly as well, and that's for veterans. But before we do, what did you make of the Director of National Intelligence most recent worldwide threat assessment leaving Iran and Hezbollah out of the terrorism threat perspective?
I mean, there's only one thing you can read into that, and it's nuclear deal. They're doing everything they can, this administration, throwing the kitchen sink at trying to create an environment where they can get any deal. I mean, and Bibi Netanyahu laid out the implications of this better than anyone in his speech before the joint session. Frank, it's the excuse they gave. They said it was a technical drafting error that left them out. It was the formatting of the PDF document. I mean, it couldn't be more absurd. They know how wrong it is what they're doing. They can't defend it, so they make up phony excuses. I mean, they're just trying to meet the needs of Tehran so they can get a deal. for whatever reason that they're totally obsessed with.
Well, we're witnessing this kind of malfeasance, and I think that's really what it is. It's not just incompetence in a lot of different places. And talk, if you would quickly, Pete Hegseth, about the breaking of another promise by this administration to America's veterans, a cause that you have been championing at Concerned Veterans for America very effectively.
Yeah, it's another example where the rhetoric doesn't meet the reality at all. And it's obfuscation, it's malfeasance in a different form, but also affecting America's veterans. Last year, my organization was part of advocating for a reform bill that gave veterans a choice card, gave them an option. And it was the first step. It's not, we knew at that point it wasn't going to change the department. Well, they implemented the choice card. 8 million choice cards went out to every veteran registered at the VA. But there's still very, very little choice. And the reason is because the VA is strangling the process of using the choice card because they don't want to change. Bureaucracies won't change. They won't reform themselves.
And Pete, just explain very quickly what the choice program involves.
Choice card, what it does, you get a choice card and you're waiting more than 30 days for an appointment. If you're a veteran and you need services and you right now you're waiting more than 30 days or you live more than 40 miles from a VA facility, you can hypothetically call a 1-800 number on your choice card and exercise the choice to go to a private provider to get that care now as opposed to waiting at the VA or having to drive hundreds of miles to go to one. The problem is the VA has drawn arbitrary bureaucratic lines around both of those requirements. So it's not 40 miles from where you get care in their mind. It's 40 miles from any VA facility. So we're hearing story. I'm testifying next week in front of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee about story after story after story where a veteran has to go 5 hours for a surgery, but because they live 10 minutes from a clinic that can't address what's going on, they don't qualify for choice. And likewise, on the time limit, has nothing to do with how long the veteran's waiting. It has to do with how long, quote, is medically necessary as determined by the VA. So there's no real choice for veterans. The gatekeeper remains the VA bureaucrat who they have to call and wait on hold and then try to get through. And then there's also been problems with non-reimbursement for private care. So now the veteran's on the hook for the cost of the private care they've got. It's a mess, and it's because the VA has never made it a priority. They don't want veterans leaving the system. And my organization, Concerned Vets for America, launched a summit, did a summit 2 weeks ago where we launched a 100-page report called Fixing Veterans Healthcare and an act inside it called the Veterans Independence Act, and it would give real choice to veterans, put them at the center of their care. We were quite proud of the fact that Newt Gingrich came and held up our report and said it's the most historic reform effort in the history of the VA. It's quite an endorsement, we think, and we're going around hoping to make it reality on the Hill.
Well, congratulations to you and Concerned Veterans for America on both of these important projects. Pete Hegseth, as I say, it's incalculably important work. It's what we owe those of you who have served in places like Iraq. It's what we owe those who have served elsewhere as well as veterans. And it really is a travesty that we're not doing better in both counts. Pete, come back to us very soon, if you would, with updates on how you're coming, especially with this new project with the Veterans Administration. In the meantime, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us. I hope you'll do so again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.